up.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
There's an old saying in football, if you have two quarterbacks, you have none. So I have a question. If you have four general managers, does that mean you have none? The Houston Texans have decided not to hire a general manager for the 2019 season. They're going to divvy up the responsibilities with four guys in the front office. They fired Brian Gain last month, their last general manager. They made a run at the New England Patriots' Nick Caserio, but the Patriots filed tampering charges, and that just kind of went away. So the Texans have decided, no, GM, we'll just have four guys and make decisions. So instead of one guy going, the buck stops here, you're going to have four people just debating and talking about pretty much every decision a general manager makes. I got to be honest with you. I think this is a disaster. I understand why the Texans may want to go through this, but I think this is going to end up being a disaster. You can't have that many hands in the cookie jar. Sometimes you need one guy to go, listen, I'm doing this. All right, now I'll take input, but I'm doing this. But four guys all arguing, do we sign Jadeveon Clowney to a long-term deal despite his injury? All of those conversations that you would have as a GM, that's their biggest one heading into the season, is Jadeveon Clowney that they tagged back in March. If you have four guys in a room all talking about it and all debating it, can you get anything done? Plus, you don't have an odd number of people, so you don't have 3-2 in favor of this. Right? You have four guys. I really don't like this, but I kind of understand what they're going to be doing. Listen, whatever general manager you bring in, and this tells me a little bit something here, and I'm just speculating, but I think the Texans know who they want to hire, and they just can't hire him today. And so you don't want to bring in a guy for a year and give him a 5-year contract, because if anybody who takes the job is going to say, all right, yeah, I want a standard 5-year deal or whatever, maybe 4-year deal or whatever. I think the Texans know who they want. That person is not available right now. And they're willing to say, we're going to give the four smart guys in our front office the power to make decisions until that guy is available. And then we'll go after him. Or maybe this is just a new trend. SB Nation Radio.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. This is Simple Minds. This is also from Breakfast Club. 1985 is our Throwback Thursday year.
What's
celebrating
the
Nolan Ryan. This was in the Breakfast Club.
So it was just a regular single, and then they added to the movie.
I don't know if it was in the soundtrack and then became a hit, or it was a hit that was used in the song. I'm assuming it was in the movie, and then they became a hit.
Never seen
the
Breakfast Club.
I think the movie came out at the same time.
Oh, okay. Never seen the movie. Is it worth, is it like a legendary movie? Should I watch it?
The Breakfast Club?
Should I watch it before I die?
It's, I don't think it ages well. In 2019. I don't know. If you, let me know on Twitter, at Tony D Radio. I don't think The Breakfast Club ages well. It's about a bunch of kids in detention on a Saturday, and they're all from different backgrounds. It's got Judd Nelson. It's got Emilio Estevez, Anthony Michael Hall, Ali Sheedy, and Molly Ringwald. And they all play stereotypical high school characters. The jock, the nerd, the outcast, the pretty girl, and then they all become friends and they all develop this relationship and share some of their inner feelings while they're in this detention on a Saturday in school. But I don't think it ages well. I think it's something in the 80s that if you grew up in the 80s, you'd been like, yeah, that's kind of my high school, man. It's exactly like my high school. I think in 2019, while some of those Like it's you know what you would call a nerd in the '80s. Like they're like kind of cool now because they you know it seems like we're in a different world, right? Maybe the athlete isn't exemplified as much, and you know you can find your own cliques a lot easier in schools these days. I think. So I don't know if it ages well.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's too worried on their phones and everything to actually care what
it like, there's all this, am I going to be accepted? Can I be popular? You know, I don't know if kids, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong. I got two kids. They don't seem to care about popularity, you know, whatnot. They just, you know, I asked them, I said, are there super popular kids and everybody's trying to be like them? And they're like, nah, not really. Yeah, I'm like, oh, okay.
In high school.
Like, no, we all do our own thing.
Yeah, in high school, there wasn't any cliques or anything. Really, to be honest, there was popular kids, sure, but like they weren't gonna like throw your milk at you or something like that.
Yeah,
grade school, yes, but like
right.
High school, no, and it was like 7 years ago, so I doubt something changed by now.
Yeah, I don't think I don't know if the movie ages well. It's another one of those John Hughes movies, so starred the Brat Pack. So, all right, next week, I kind of looking forward to next week. SEC Media Days are going to go on in Birmingham. And also ACC Media Days will be occurring on Wednesday. And I think Big 12 Media Days is going to be next week, too. All right, so this is where college football starts heating up a little bit. Now, you can say, oh, college football, it's right around the corner. Eh, not really. We still got like six, seven weeks before it starts. We still got all of July left, and then we got all of August left before we get to the start of the season. No preseason to talk about like we do with the NFL. But media days are important because media days, as I've told you guys many times, is really kind of the first real, hey, here's what's going on. Like, here's what we're thinking. You're going to get a lot of media that's going to say, I think this team stinks, or I think this team is going to surprise you. You're going to have the all preseason conference team. You're going to have the media predictions on where they're going to finish. And while a lot of it's kind of useless information, it just is their ingredients to whet an appetite for a sport that is coming 6 weeks from now. But I also like media days because, again, you get to see, you know, we're kind of in a dormant time right now. We're getting geared up for football. We just got done an NBA season in the off season. Major League Baseball had All-Star game. And now college football is bubbling. This year in particular, there has been a number of complaints, if you will, on social media about how college football and the playoff has sort of watered down the expectations of the season. Whereas in, I don't want to say old days, but before playoff, even before BCS, college football had a little bit more of an open feel because you never knew when the loss was going to come. It used to be, you know, if you can go unbeaten, you're going to get recognized. And if you lose a game, it would really derail your chance of being one of the teams that would play for a national championship. Now, in the old days, you were kind of committed to a bowl game and then you'd just see how it would play out at the end of it all. But when we had the 1-2, my God, remember we used to have chaos Saturday, right? We'd have all these teams that were either undefeated or all with one loss. And that would just be one Saturday sometime in like late October where like four of them would lose and we would shuffle the chairs so massively. And yeah, did the playoff take away a little bit of that? It certainly did. Are we living in a world of college football where it's Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma, and whatever team comes out of the Big Ten, and that's pretty much it? And, you know, maybe the Pac-12 will surprise us, but you know what? There's really nothing else left. Yes and no. Yes and no. Is Alabama going to have a good team this year? Of course they are. They're Alabama. They're coached by Nick Saban. Is Alabama going to make the playoff this year? Well, I don't know. You know how I don't know? I've watched Georgia the last 2 years give Alabama a better shot every time they've met them in the SEC championship game. And one of these years, Kirby Smart's going to pull this off. Could be this year. What about Florida, for example, in the SEC? Florida's got a great defense playing. They got a great defense. They are going to be really hard to score on. And Felipe Franks, who was a detriment to the team, became an asset to the team late in the season. And I think he's got a level of confidence where that Gator offense, now led by a really good coach in Dan Mullen, is going to take that next step and be a threat in the East. Is Alabama excellent? Of course they are. But their conference also is going to say, yeah, but we ain't going anywhere either. And Oklahoma is the same thing. Oklahoma is going to be fantastic. And I think Jalen Hurts is going to be the newcomer of the year. And I think Hurts is going to have that kind of coming out where we're going to be really talking about him in terms of a Heisman consideration. I think under Lincoln Riley, I think Hurts is going to flourish, but could lose to Texas again. Right? I don't want to say that it's wide open, but I'm not just going to hand it to the teams everyone thinks is going to just be there at the end. Now, in all likelihood, Clemson will be there at the end. They play in a conference that they should dominate. But remember, Clemson has no room for error. Clemson can't have a bad night against a Wake Forest team, right? If it's going to be tight for the Final Four, Clemson can't have a loss to a mediocre ACC school, which could happen. I mean, they're playing with a lot less wiggle room than Alabama is. The SEC, you could make the argument, and there have been plenty of arguments about a possibility of two teams in. Sometimes it happens. But I'm not ready to just concede that college football is worthless because you can just write it in ink that Alabama will be there and Clemson will be there and Oklahoma will be there and whoever's out of the Big Ten will be there, right? I don't know. There are some good teams in those conferences that could make a little bit of noise. Not so much that they take over, but they could shake up the college football landscape. I'm not really ready to go down that road, and I think it's cynical to do that. College football has lost some of the reasons that we really liked the sport in terms of its urgency, right? Every Saturday was very, very important. That's why I always warned people about expanding the playoff. Yes, I know expanding the playoff seems like a really good idea, but you will miss those moments where a loss really mattered, right? Or when you've upset a team and realize, oh, it's not going to make a difference at all, right? I'm not going to eliminate them and their presence from the postseason. If we expanded it to 8, or maybe, you know, like some people just want to go, hey, let's go 16. There is a point where you get and then you have to give up. And what you give up in college football when you expand the playoff is those magical Saturdays that I talked about where all hell could break loose and everybody's scrambling to figure out exactly what this means going forward. But I'm not ready to just throw these teams in there right now. Especially Alabama. Alabama is playing in a conference that can beat you. Now, the fact that Nick Saban hasn't been beaten like completely out, you know, just been completely thrown out of any consideration for a national champion, is a really testament to him and his program. But look, Auburn is going to be around, all right? Florida and Georgia are going to be around. Their LSU isn't going anywhere. Now, Alabama, in all likelihood, will win the SEC. But I'm saying the road isn't automatically paved. The SEC is the best conference in college football, right? We know that. And I know some of you in the North might make a little bit of, you know, different argument. But listen, this year the SEC is going to be really, really good. There have been years, and I've told people this, look, there have been years where the SEC's top echelon teams were great, but the middle echelon teams weren't great. There have been plenty of times where the middle of the SEC left some stuff on the table. I mean, just didn't play up to the level of the conference. I don't think you're going to get that this year. I think there's going to be some real excellence coming out of the SEC from the middle of the pack, right? That are going to be a tough out week in and week out. You know, one of the cliches that college football always throws out there, people who don't like the SEC always throw out there, and I hate it. Well, when you schedule cupcakes all the time like the SEC... You know what? Go through SEC schedules and find, you know, a schedule that is completely devoid of cupcakes and doesn't have at least one out of conference game that's supposed to be tough. It may not be tough when they play them, but when it was scheduled, it was supposed to be tough. Right? You could make the argument Florida State is down and really down. Florida plays them every year. They're also going to play Miami. Right, South Carolina plays Clemson. Now, sometimes, and I know because I went to South Carolina, we've throttled Clemson. Clemson has been trash. We took care of business in the rivalry. But there's a lot of times, and not just this recent success, where Clemson's been very, very good. Alabama has taken games against Penn State. They've opened the season against USC. They opened the season against Florida State 1 year. Auburn opened up the season against Washington at a time 1 year. right? There's been a lot of these kickoff classics where LSU has gone and played tough competition. Georgia went out to play Colorado one year when Colorado was decent, right? It's not just, oh, we'll play our own conference and everything else is going to be some Division II school, right? SEC schools do play and continue to play tough competition. Ask Georgia, when Paul Johnson was down at Georgia Tech, ask Georgia how much they like playing the Yellow Jackets every year with that option offense. Yeah, some years it gave them fits, drove them nuts. Right? So again, there's this old adage that this conference, you know, just plays amongst itself and, you know, is living on reputation. But I wouldn't say that this year. I would not say that this year. And again, it pains me because I've had a rivalry in my house for many, many years with my wife and the Florida Gators. But Florida is going to be outstanding this year. And I've told her that. I said, your football teams could win the national championship. Your football team's that good. If they don't screw it up, they're that good. That game against Georgia in early November in Jacksonville could win them the East, put them in a position to knock off whoever is going to be playing in the SEC championship game and get them into the playoff. Their defense is going to be that good. Their offense may struggle at times, but their defense should be rock solid. Rock solid. Pains me to say it. But I've been telling you all year, we're going to watch this. We're going to watch this season. As I told you a few months ago, people want to sleep on, they say, oh, it's just Alabama and Georgia. There's the Florida Gators, and don't sleep on them. I love the Dan Mullen hired because I like Dan Mullen a lot. Loved him at Mississippi State. I love him even more at Florida. He's very good. And he had that team playing late last year, very, very well. It took him a while to get Franks up to speed, but it was Florida's going to be outstanding. All right, SEC talk. We'll get some more college football coming up. We also talk some NBA later in the show. It's SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Oh, well done. Throwback Thursday. Shane Young, NBA, is going to join us in 10 minutes. We'll talk to him about the NBA. Adam Silver's got a problem. He really does. He has an issue. He has a free agent period, right, that goes, okay, free agent starts soon. Free agent starts soon and go. And then they go. And then all of a sudden everyone's like, yep, got a deal. He's like, wait, what? Wait a minute. You weren't supposed to be talking or what? How are you guys? What's going on here? It's like, no, it's all good. Oh, it's good. It's 4 years and blah, blah, blah. It's like, wait a minute. Do you guys are like psychic? So he's got this issue where he's got people, you know, negotiating, making deals as soon as free agency begins. Is it a big deal? No, because fans like it when out of the gate, bam, we're off and running with free agency. Does he have a problem with it in terms of the competitibility, you know, the competitiveness of it? Yeah, because, you know, teams are like, we're going to go after the, wait a minute, we can't. He's already signed. He's already agreed to a deal. Not signed, but agreed to a deal. But if there's one thing the NBA is, and we've said this many, many times, is that it's a players' league in terms of they like to accommodate players. They like to accommodate the players' wishes. Adam Silver is absolutely notorious for this. Does it all the time. You know, tries to create something that, you know, the players are unhappy, he wants to make them happy. The players like this. The players like doing it the way they're doing it, right? They like the ability to go find a friend and go make a deal and go do that. There's also going to be a new challenge rule in the NBA. So you can see like Greg Popovich go, oh, I want to challenge this. And we'll see how that works out. Major League Baseball is, we talked about the fact that the Athletic League is going to let players steal first base on any live ball that's thrown. So if a ball gets past a catcher on any count, you could just steal the first base. Major League Baseball wants to see how it plays out and get some information on it before they implement it at a major league level. One other thing they're letting the Athletic League do, they did it in their All-Star game, which I found interesting, was they used computers, basically what they call a robot umpire, but it's not really a robot umpire. There was a live umpire behind the plate, but he got information on whether or not a pitch was a ball or a strike based on the TrackMan Doppler technology that is used to track pitches and the strike zone. So a pitch would come, and he would hear in his earpiece from somebody upstairs whether or not it was a ball or a strike based on what the computer said. Now, a couple of things. The umpire behind home plate was still needed for check swings, et cetera, in that regard. Also, obviously, plays at the plate. But also, he could override anything that the computer sent, right? So how did the players react to this? Well, some of the players said the only concerns that they had were late calls. The calls were late. Right. One pitcher said, I got the ball back from the catcher before the call was even made. So it's not instantaneous. Second, the way they're building out the strike zone, one of the pitchers said, look, high strikes were called all night. Now, technically, it's a strike, but umpires traditionally don't call it. So now we need to readjust because now we were getting those. We don't normally get those. Batters were saying the same things. Right now, pitcher is obviously excited because his strike zone is expanding. But then the batters were saying, well, you know, obviously now we have to adjust too, because if our strike zone is going to be the real strike zone, you know, now we have to adjust our eyes. But this technology is really interesting because it if you see it in practice, it's actually unbelievable. It's very similar in golf. When you see a guy hit a ball in golf and somehow this computer can show you where it's heading, what spin it's at, where it's landing, how far it went, and all of those informations just based on what had an impact. And so this similar technology is following the pitch with its trajectory and now knows, you know, whether or not it's a ball or a strike. Now, we can all say, hey, listen, use tech. We always say this all the time. If you have the technology, use it. But I wonder if we'd actually really like it. If we would actually really want a computer calling balls and strikes. Personally, I kind of do. I kind of like to see where it goes. You know, one of the problems that I found, you know, what used to bother me about Major League Baseball, you'd hear it all the time. They'd be like, because I used to cover the Rockies, you'd hear this in the clubhouse, not the clubhouse per se, but the press box. They would say a particular name of an umpire and they'd be like, oh, he's got a big strike zone or he's got a narrow strike zone or whatever. You don't want that. You shouldn't have that in Major League Baseball. The strike zone's the strike zone, the strike zone. You shouldn't have an umpire goes, yeah, well, I like my strike zone like this. And another umpire, well, I like my strike zone like this. If you can get it so it's consistent and says, look, this is the way it is for everybody, I think you use it. I think you could use the technology. And keeping the home plate umpire there, obviously, for different things that the computer can't do, right? Plays at the plate, check swings, things like that. Also, when you empower the umpire to override the computer, he's not a slave to the computer. Right. He can say, you know what? I'm sorry. No, that wasn't a strike. That's a ball. I saw it an inch off the plate. I'm sorry. Because those things can't be 100% accurate. I'm sure at times it's going to flub up a little bit. And one of the other things the umpires have to adjust to that I failed to mention was that sometimes the computer wouldn't register the pitch at all. Now, obviously, technology will get better and better on it. But that's when the umpire would hear no call, and then he would have to make a call. So he'd have to watch every pitch as if he's going to make the call. But then he'd have to keep his mouth shut until the thing hit his ear pierce, and then he would say ball or strike. But if he got no call in his ear, he would say, well, that was a strike. So it's got some of the things that's got to work out, you know, in terms of it actually being something viable for Major League Baseball. But man, this is something I think Major League Baseball would be interesting if they actually had this. But boy, it's got to go through a lot of stuff before you did all that. But at least Major League Baseball's trying, you know. At least they're trying. It's not always easy to change some of the things in your sport to get everybody to agree on it. You know, some sports do it, and, you know, NASCAR, for example, is excellent at it. NASCAR will be like, what do you guys like? What do you want to change? You want to do that? All right, let's change it. Let's make it like this now. All right, you guys want a playoff? We got a playoff. Oh, you guys want wins to count more than, okay, we'll do that. Oh, you guys want to break up the races so that you can get more points for finishing, you know, the first stage, second stage, third stage? Yeah, we'll do that too. No worries, that'll be implemented next year. Baseball? Yeah, you want to steal first base on a pass ball? Yeah, let's look it over for a while before we really make that decision. Oh, robot umpires? Yeah, let's really let's think that over for a while before we actually implement it. But at least they're making the conversation. Shane Young joins us next. We'll talk some NBA. What does all this mean this offseason? And does Adam Silver have a problem he can fix? That's next. SB Nation AM.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
It's Throwback Thursday, SB Nation Radio. This is Cool in the Gang, 1985?
Yes, it is.
All right, I'm rolling along now. Celebrating Nolan Ryan's 4,000th strikeout on this stage, striking out Danny Heap. But we got some NBA to talk about from Forbes Sports. Shane Young joins us on a Progressive Insurance Hotline. How are you, Shane?
I'm doing great today. How about you, man?
Good, man. Appreciate it. All right, so let me ask you this about Adam Silver. He comes out, he's sort of concerned about the way free agency is working. You know, he's wondering, boy, how are these deals coming out so quickly? Does he have a problem? Is this a real issue for him in the league? Or is this something that is kind of just, it's kind of fixable?
I think it's a split concern because on one hand, I do think that it is a problem for owners because if you're an owner of, let's say, the Milwaukee Bucks or, you know, just for lack of ideas here, the Indiana Pacers, just a small market team, how can you be so sure that everything you do as an organization is going to matter? It doesn't matter if you do everything right, like Masai Ujiri, Bobby Webster and the Toronto Raptors did. It doesn't matter if you do everything wrong. A superstar just might not want to be with your organization if it's in a location that's not desirable for him. So, yeah, player movement is at an all-time high, and there's not anything you can do about it with the contracts that are being given out right now. I don't think the money matters that much because the top of the top of the top realizes that they can make it up in the long run. It doesn't have to be that big five-year supermax because they know they can get it later on in their career. But on the other hand, I think that the fans, us as media, we eat it up and we crave it and we love it so much that the NBA has nothing or has done nothing but gain in popularity. So I'm actually just put mostly on the side of it's a good thing for the league in general, but I would say specifically for the small market owners, it's something that they're going to definitely address in the next CBA, but that won't be for a good while now. So this is what we're going to have for the next five or so years.
Yeah, and isn't it a problem in terms of the CBA? Because while you're right, you could probably find a way to put more financial incentives for stars to stay where they're at. But the reality of it is, taking kind of the freedom away, it seems like players value that more.
Oh, yeah. And they value shorter deals. They value the idea that, oh, if I don't like the situation, I can get out of it. You know, we're in an era where relationships all around the world don't last as long as they used to. That goes across anything. That goes across, you know, personal relationships. That goes business, jobs, and we're seeing the same thing in the NBA. It's just the social media age, and I do believe the players are more comfortable with having the flexibility to do what they want rather than being locked into a situation. But if you're in a big market team, Los Angeles, New York, I mean, a really good point was made recently that the Knicks didn't get anybody, but still, New York got two stars. Los Angeles got three stars with AD being forcing his way there via trade. That was essentially a free agent decision, and then Kawhi and PG going to the Clippers. That's four top 10 stars pushing their way to New York or pushing their way to a big market, I should say. And that's something that is going to rub the owners of the Midwest region and the Northwest region the wrong way.
Is it a concern for Silver that an average fan who doesn't really follow this super intensely, but may go to, and we'll just use the Oklahoma City Thunder, for example, because that's probably where the extreme is. He goes to 5-10 Oklahoma City Thunder games a year, watches them on TV, may listen to them on the radio, and one day he's thinking, gee, if we could just get one more piece to this Paul George Russell Westbrook puzzle, we might be competitive. And today he's waking up going, they're going to trade Russell Westbrook and we're just going to have draft picks for the next 5 years.
Oh, yeah, that is a definite concern. And, you know, just speaking from experience, because I have a lot of Pacers fans around my area.
Yeah.
You know, there is a concern because, you know, the Pacers were set to give Paul George the best deal of his career, something that was going to keep him in Indiana throughout his entire prime. And he just said, no, I don't want to deal with it anymore. I don't want to be known as a mediocre team. But you're right. Like, the fans of these teams, they're looking at their rosters with a couple superstars and possible contention. And then after one sour season or just two sour, unfortunate seasons, that can all blow up in an instant with Paul George requesting out and Sam Presti deciding, well, there's no point in keeping Russell Westbrook here. But what I do have to say, man, is that I think if you're a fan of these teams, if you're a fan of these small market teams that just have no hope in keeping your guys for a long time, I think it's actually the best thing possible to know in advance, the best thing possible for these stars to, you know, request out instead of walking away like Kevin Durant did in 2016, you know, instead of walking away, leaving your team empty-handed. I think it's a good thing that you're going to get a haul of draft picks, a haul of players back. So, you know, from that sense, it's not the worst thing in the world if they request out, because it's definitely a lot better than just saying see ya and your team being just, you know, put into the dark ages for years and years.
Shane, can we read into Kawhi Leonard now? When we were talking about where he was going to go, stay in Toronto, go to L.A., many of us thought going to L.A. meant Lakers and teaming up with LeBron. The idea of taking Paul George with him to the Clippers, do we read into Kawhi that maybe he's just doesn't want to be on a team with LeBron, or is the Clippers just a place that's just more attractive because it is?
I think there is some truth to what you said there about the LeBron thing. You know, I wouldn't really say, because a lot of fans are going to run with the idea that, oh, he just hates LeBron, he wouldn't play with him in any situation. Don't think that's the case. I think that if it was just LeBron in Los Angeles, if it was, you know, LeBron and quote-unquote the kids, like, you know, Lonzo and,
right,
and Ingram and all those guys, and let's say they won 45 games last year and got put out in the first round, to say that. Well, I think Kawhi would have went there, because that's, you know, you go to that situation, you can talk yourself into being the man with LeBron being 35 this December. But the idea, I think that we can read now is that Kawhi does not want to be known as that super team, super villain, the one that Kevin Durant created in 2016. So I think that this is just an awesome move that shows his competitiveness because on two sides of this. One, he's going to the team that has not ever been to the conference finals, has not ever won a championship or anything, and he's going to try to do that for that team and that organization, something he just did for Toronto. So that is an awesome move. That's something that we haven't seen, a guy that's a superstar that's won a championship with three different franchises. He wants to be that guy. And who knows, signing a short-term deal, he might decide, oh, I want to do it with another organization. Now, I think this is like a Michael Jordan type of move to where he just decides, I'm going to build up my legacy the best possible way I can, the quickest way I can. And this is that's the decision he made. On the other side of it, though, like, he has decided, well, I'm just not going to team up with LeBron. I'm going to do it my own way with my own guys, with a new system, with a new coach. And that's tough. I don't care how good you are. That's really tough just to go into a new situation and automatically be favorites like they are.
Shane Young joins us talking some NBA, Forbes Sports, and again on our Progressive Insurance Hotline. So when you look at the Western Conference, and again, this is all on paper now, and we probably still have some things to sort of figure out, but who's the biggest loser in the Western Conference? A team that is like, oh God, we didn't really do enough. Everyone else is getting better, and we didn't do enough.
See, I think a lot of people would disagree with me on this, and not people have attacked me, but I think Portland got worse.
Yeah.
I don't think they have the wing depth now. I don't think they have. I don't think Hassan Whiteside's good at basketball right now. And a lot of people would argue that they got exactly what they needed with the pick and roll type of guy for Damian Lillard. But I just don't see that. I don't think Hassan Whiteside's good at defense as much as people think. And this West, that we've just seen the Blazers somehow, in God's name, get the three seed twice in a row. I don't think that's even possible this time around. I don't think they're going to catch people off guard now. They've had insanely good health with Damian Lillard and C.J. McCollum for the last three or four seasons. Like, they've been there every game, every step of the way, it feels like. That's tough to really bank on with Utah getting better. Better than Portland by a long shot to me. And then you have the Lakers, obviously, they're going to take one of those playoff spots. We don't know who is going to fall out, but they're going to take one. And I would also say the San Antonio Spurs.
Yeah.
If I was the Spurs, I would trade DeMar DeRozan if I could get a decent return, just because I think their team is capped out. I think their team is absolutely at its ceiling at like 48 wins with that group. They would just need a really, really good comeback season for DeJounte Murray. Don't rule that out, but that's what they would need to really crack into the playoffs again. Because if that doesn't happen, if DeJounte Murray isn't like a, Mike Conley type of production point guard, just for the lack of a better name off the top of my head, I think that they would be looking at a 40-win season probably.
What are you hearing about Russell Westbrook? I heard he wants to go to Miami, but can he go to Miami? Who are the teams that are in play, and where could he possibly end up?
I don't think there's a perfect destination, man. I think that Miami. I think Miami might be the best, and that is just because it's something. It's somewhere that they can sell him on the idea of we can make a run to the Eastern Conference. But as I was telling someone the other day, if you get Russell Westbrook, and that includes getting rid of Justice Winslow, you're not really doing your franchise any good. Russell Westbrook is obviously a lot better player. Russell Westbrook is a top 15 player, of course, make no mistake. But if it's just him and Jimmy Butler with no real pick-and-roll threat, if you have to get rid of Bam, I mean, if you keep Bam, that's great, but you still don't have a center that's, worthy of being feared in the Eastern Conference playoffs or anything. So I think that their depth would be severely gutted, and Miami would be looking at the next 4 years of being in that 6-5 seed, and that's just not going to get you anywhere, especially when we know Russell Westbrook is just so inefficient in the playoffs. His numbers drop considerably. So Miami is probably the best just for superstardom and just to have Pat Riley feel like that he has a contender, and that's probably what he wants at this age of his life. And so I think Miami is the best. But Detroit, if Detroit could somehow get that with the package around me, I don't know, Reggie Jackson going back to Oklahoma City, which would be funny enough, just something that they could make the salaries match, because I think Blake and Russ would be pretty awesome on the viewer to watch. But again, if you put Russ on the same court as two traditional bigs, and one of them that can't shoot to save his life, and Andre Drummond, I'm not sure that you're doing your offense any good.
At Young NBA is where you can find him on Twitter, Shane Young, Forbes Sports. Good stuff, my man. I really appreciate it. Hope to get you on again soon. Thank you, man. But appreciate it.
Anytime. Thank you.
You got it, Shane Young, NBA, Forbes Sports. I was breaking down some of the interesting developments of Russell Westbrook. And boy, he really had that broken down pretty good. Really knew where the angles were on the possible Russell Westbrook deal. All right, when we come back, we'll say goodbye to a baseball pioneer. That's next, SB Nation AM.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Glad you could be with us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. Sad news if you ever read his book. Jim Boughton, former Yankee pitcher and author of Ball 4, passed away at the age of 80. This was one of the most important books in sports, in American sports. I called it in the tees, say goodbye to a baseball pioneer. And we always use that term as a guy who may have invented a way to throw to baseball or came up with a different way to play the game or anything like that. But Jim Boughton did something by writing Ball 4 that had really never been done before in sports. He took the image of a very wholesome sport of baseball players that were just as wholesome as American and as apple pie. And he stripped it down. because in this diary that later became this bestseller, he exposed baseball and its athletes for, you know, cheating on your wives, getting drunk, cursing like sailors, playing hungover. He wrote about Mickey Mantle in a way that people didn't see Mickey Mantle. It was a revolutionary book because what they call the fourth wall, you hear that term all the time, like when an actor turns to the camera and talks to you, the audience, like he breaks character. It's called breaking the fourth wall. That's what Jim Boughton's book did. It broke the wall of the clubhouse, right? You could go to a game and you could be like, ah, Mickey, tell us what you eat for breakfast. You're like, I eat Wheaties every single day because I'm big and strong. And you'd be like, wow. And then you'd realize maybe sometimes Mick didn't eat anything for breakfast except maybe, you know, they had 5 cups of coffee because he was massively hungover because he was with some stewardess the night before. I mean, it was that kind of book. And it was really tantalizing. And you'd be like, I remember when I read it, you know, I had known about the book, so it didn't come to me as a shock because I read it many years later. But I can imagine going, oh, hey, I'm going to read about a guy who's, you know, in his diary about being a professional baseball player. That's got to be kind of interesting and fun. And then reading it and realizing, oh, my God, he's taken everything that I thought. I remember this was like, you know, he was playing in the 60s and stripping it down. And it's a very good book. It's if you like sports books, read it. Especially if you're a young person, find it, read it. Again, you'll be reading about some old baseball players and stuff you already know, so it's not going to hit you like it hit the audiences when it came out, but it's one of the most important books. It's one of the most important exposés on American sports that was ever written because it was the first. Jim Boughton passing away at the age of 80. It's SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM.